In 2007, you know, I was so weak, I couldn't sit up more than 10 minutes. I could take just a couple of steps with two walking sticks. But, you know, I'd been tinkering, experimenting with food, supplements, electrical stimulation of muscles, which I'd added to my rehab program. And, you know, what is super interesting, Matthew, is that I was improving to the point where I could walk around again. But because I had progressive MS, I'd let go of the future. I had learned to take each day as it unfolded. And so I didn't know what any of that meant. It wasn't until in that spring, ironically, on Mother's Day, when, you know, I told my family I really wanted to try riding my bike again, which I had not done for 6 years. And my wife, Jackie, told my 16-year-old boy, Zach, you run alongside on the left. And she told my 13-year-old daughter, Zebby, you run alongside on the right. And she had followed. And I got on my bike and I biked around the block. Now that big 16-year-old boy, he's crying. The 13-year-old girl, she's crying. Jackie's crying. And when I relive that moment, I cry even now, because that was the moment that I understood. Our current understanding of secondary progressive multiple sclerosis is incomplete. Who knows how much recovery might be possible?
Hello there, friends. Welcome once more to the Happy Habit Podcast. I'm Matthew. I'm here every Monday and Thursday. A reminder, we're on Instagram and on YouTube. If you'd like to check out some of the videos of these recent episodes, you just need to search for Happy Habit Podcast on both those platforms. Now, Dr. Terry Walls is an author of the Walls Protocol. She's a clinical professor of medicine at the University of Iowa, in addition to being proof positive that food can indeed be your medicine. She was diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis, and spent 4 years relying on a wheelchair for her mobility. So debilitating were her symptoms. She was faced with making one of two choices: to either give up on life or continue going. Thankfully, she chose the latter, and she dived into researching how nutrition could positively impact her condition and went on to develop her Walls Protocol, a diet-based protocol that would see her go from being wheelchair-bound to being able to ride her bike to work once again. 20 years after her MS diagnosis, she continues in her mission to help others with her diet and lifestyle philosophy. In this episode, Dr. Walls tells us about the onset of her symptoms over 2 decades ago and how it impacted her and her family, as well as her professional life. We learn about what motivated Dr. Walls in the darkest of moments when her condition held little promise. We hear about what steps she took in relation to her nutrition when she made the decision not to fall victim to the medically accepted limitations of her diagnosis. Dr. Walls tells us about the main driver of MS, the mitochondria, or the powerhouse of our cells, and how this knowledge helped her establish a dietary protocol that helped her rediscover her hitherto waning energy levels. We hear about how diet can lessen the negative effects of systemic inflammation, especially in terms of autoimmune diseases. We discover that the dramatic improvement in Dr. Walls' condition is not an anomaly, but as a study she has been carrying out in other MS patients shows, changes in diet and nutrition intake can improve the health of other chronic disease sufferers too. And expect to learn what foods Dr. Walls suggests we eat and what foods we should consider eliminating from our diets. To say that Dr. Walls' condition as an MS patient has improved over the last 2 decades since she was initially diagnosed is an understatement. In times past, her case would have been labelled miraculous. The truth, however, is very much grounded in science and reality. Dr. Walls rejected the traditional route of submitting completely to pharmaceutical drugs, instead choosing to allow her food provide the nutrients that she needed to restore her health. It's important to state that Dr. Walls still has MS. She has not been cured, but her experimentation with her nutrition allowed her to initially drastically reverse her decline and then return to practice medicine. It then also allowed her to dramatically slow down the progress of this debilitating disease. Her determination and her story are really remarkable. And I hope you enjoy this conversation and find as much inspiration in it as I did. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Terry Walls, for joining me today. I have to say that your story is an inspirational one. No doubt you've heard that many times at this point. Having learned about your story and read about you, being on your website and looked at previous interviews that you've conducted, I think two words spring to mind: determination and transformation. Whenever you were given your diagnosis, your MS diagnosis, all those years ago, many people would have considered that to have been a life sentence, but you reacted and responded to that differently. I want to know, was there a seminal moment for you where you decided that your MS diagnosis was not going to define you?
You know, when I was in the Tilt-Klein wheelchair and life was clearly getting relentlessly worse, I had two young children at that time. You know, my kids were 8 and 5 when I was diagnosed, 11 and 8 when I'm in the wheelchair. And I know my kids are watching. And so they could see that I either give up and give in, or I keep doing what I can every day. So I kept doing my little workouts and I start reading the basic science. And I would start experimenting on myself. And I was doing all that to slow my decline, because I had accepted what I'd been told is that when you have secondary progressive MS, that recovery is not possible. You can do all that you can to slow the decline. And so that's what I was doing, because, you know, my hand still worked. I could still feed myself. I could still wipe my own butt. And that was worth a lot. And I was quite shocked when, you know, in 2008, I finally put together, you know, this protocol that not only slowed the decline, it stopped the decline. And then, you know, I was getting stronger. And that was shocking.
Just to clarify for people, there are basic components of MS. Can you characterize it? Can you define exactly how MS would affect a patient?
So multiple sclerosis is a immune disorder where your immune cells are attacking the myelin. And most people have relapsing remitting MS, which I was diagnosed, where you have episodes where things are worse than things. And that's called the attack, and then things get better. That's called the remission. And over time, nearly everyone converts to the progressive phase of the illness, where there's no more attacks. There's only this slow, relentless decline. And I was in that phase, and I'd had, you know, basically 7 years of relentless decline, and I'd had 20 years of relentless worsening of trigeminal neuralgia. So it was very clear I was on track to become bedridden by my illness, probably demented by my illness, because I could tell I was beginning to have trouble with brain fog, and that my pain was getting relentlessly worse. And I was likely going to have that, my face pain, my trigeminal neuralgia, turned permanently on. And so in 2007, you know, I was so weak, I couldn't sit up more than 10 minutes. I could take just a couple of steps with two walking sticks. And as I said, my trigeminal neuralgia was much, much worse. But, you know, I'd been tinkering, experimenting with food, supplements, electrical stimulation of muscles, which I'd added to my rehab program. And, you know, what is super interesting, Matthew, is that I was improving to the point where I could walk around again. But because I had progressive MS, I'd let go of the future. I had learned to take each day as it unfolded. And so I didn't know what any of that meant. It wasn't until in that spring, ironically on Mother's Day, when, you know, I told my family I really wanted to try riding my bike again, which I had not done for 6 years. And my wife, Jackie, told my 16-year-old boy, Zach, Zach, you run alongside on the left. And she told my 13-year-old daughter, Zebby, you run alongside on the right. And she'd follow. We all got into position. And I got on my bike and I biked around the block. Now, that big 16-year-old boy, he's crying. The 13-year-old girl, She's crying. Jackie's crying. And when I relive that moment, I cry even now, because that was the moment that I understood. You know, our current understanding of secondary progressive multiple sclerosis is incomplete. Who knows how much recovery might be possible? And so I bike a little bit more every day. And in October, Jackie comes home and says, "Honey, I've signed us up for the Courage Ride. It's 18.5 miles. However far you go will be wonderful." And so, you know, that weekend we go, and I finished that. I crossed the finish line. Once again, we're all crying. You know, my kids are crying, Jackie's crying, I'm crying. And this fundamentally changes how I think about disease and health. It will change the way I practice medicine, and it will change the focus of the research that I do. And I've made it my mission since to change the standard of care so that people, when they're diagnosed with MS or any systemic autoimmune condition, they may be told that, yep, we've got drugs, you know, FDA approved drugs that will treat your condition. But just as important as the drugs is addressing diet and lifestyle, is creating health by changing your health behaviors.
The ability to go from being confined to a wheelchair to cycling 18 miles, you cannot overstate how significant that is.
It is huge. And I want all of your listeners to know that at that time in 2008, no one thought diet and lifestyle really mattered for MS. No one thought that reversal of such profound disability was possible. And we've since shown that in others with progressive MS, we can reverse serious disability. We've done that in clinical trials. We've done that in clinical practice. We've done 7 clinical trials. We've consistently shown that people can change their diet, reduce their fatigue, improve their quality of life, improve their mood. And now we're adding other disease states to our studies. And, you know, we've published 60, almost 70 scientific papers, peer-reviewed papers about diet and lifestyle, cited over 2,000 times by other scientists. So my ideas in 2008 were dangerous. I was condemned. I was banned as a speaker. And now I'm celebrated as a researcher, as a pioneer that led the way to this profound idea that food matters, that food can change how we do the biology of life in our cells.
Because in the early stages, whenever you decided that you weren't going to, as I said, be defined by this diagnosis of MS, you decided to experiment, as you said. You supplemented. You noticed an improvement in your energy levels. But what you wanted to was achieve a transformation and an improvement in your condition, but via food, obtaining nutrients from a natural source. Now, having listened to previous talks of yours, the mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell, is something that seems to be a driver of MS. Can you talk to us about this?
Yeah. So the mitochondria generate adenosine triphosphate, which is basically the currency that we use to drive the chemical reactions necessary for all biological processes in our cells. And the brain, it uses the most ATP of any tissue. If you can't make enough ATP, brain cells can't do their job. Brain cells begin to die. Axons begin to die. Mitochondria that should energize the myelin can't do that, and the myelin begins to deteriorate. We now realize that mitochondrial dysfunction is a major driver of disability, is a major driver of the conversion to from relapse remitting to the progressive phase of the illness. And so we want strategies to improve mitochondrial function. My approach at first was supplements, which I could tell, you know, when I started taking them in 2004, were helpful, that I felt certainly worse without my supplements. But the supplements did not get me out of the wheelchair. It was when I redesigned my paleo diet to take the what I was taking in nutrient form from the foods. And probably what I want your listeners to understand is the supplements helped me identify what were the foods I should add. And because foods are complex, you know, there are many, many thousands of compounds in kale, in onions, in mushrooms, in liver, in meat, in bone broth, that these are complex, complex with many, many different molecules, not just what you're taking in supplement form. So I had more robust nutrition. And I want everyone to know that if you are chronically ill, your nutritional needs are much, much greater in order to recover than someone who's in perfect health. You sort of imagine a windstorm comes through and wrecks my house. It's going to take a lot to clear away the debris from the house and then rebuild it and repair it so I can live in it again. If I have damage in my brain, my cranial nerves, my spinal cord from multiple sclerosis, it's going to take a lot more energy, a lot more nutrients to clear away the damage and rebuild healthy nervous tissue, healthy myelin, healthy synapses, the connection between nerve cells, healthy axons, the wiring between nerve cells. I have to clear away the damage and I have to rebuild. So we need even better nutrition than healthy folks have. And unfortunately, most westernized individuals are eating terrible diets. We're having not enough protein. We're having lots of added sugars, lots of highly processed foods made from refined carbohydrates, refined flours into breads, pastas, and cereals. They give us calories, but not the building blocks that our cells need to do the biology of life and to repair damaged tissues.
And of course, your own transformation, your own improvement in your medical condition has now informed the way that you practice medicine. You have written the book, The Walls Protocol. Could you give a brief synopsis of what The Walls Protocol looks like?
So we're talking about improving your diet, adding a stress management practice, adding exercise, reducing your toxin exposures. In terms of the diet, I've graded it from, you know, level 1, 2, 3, and an elimination diet. So we talk about adding more non-starchy vegetables, particularly green leafy vegetables, cabbage family, onion family, mushroom family, and deeply colored things like beets, carrots, berries, and sufficient protein. And I have a vegetarian version and a meat eater's version because I realize they're vegetarians for their deeply held spiritual beliefs. Then I provide a guidance for a more paleolithic version. We talk about the benefits of fermented foods, organ meats, seaweed, nuts, and seeds. And then I have a ketogenic version, which is lower in carbohydrates. And then we talk about a version that's free of nightshades and has an elimination of the most common food allergy types of foods. But I want people to make these changes at a pace that they and their family can make.
And is something like the Walls Protocol, that's not necessarily for people who present at your clinic. Anybody can ascribe to this philosophy.
Absolutely. So, you know, we've had, you know, my TED Talk has had nearly 4 million views. My books have over 400,000 copies sold. And we certainly hear every week from thousands of people who've seen the TED Talk or read my books, implemented the concepts, and transformed their lives. You know, I hear from people who have a wide variety of autoimmune conditions that frankly, I have to look up to see what they are, that they were able to stop and reverse. I've seen, again, contacts from people with genetic conditions, muscular dystrophy, cystic fibrosis, who have implemented the concepts and have seen their quality of life improve. Now, they still have their genetic condition, but they're much healthier following the Walls Protocol than when they were following the standard westernized diet, which is so high in sugar, so high in processed foods.
And are those things that you just mentioned, the sugar and the processed foods, are those contributing to the thing that we keep hearing every day at this stage about systemic inflammation and people suffering from systemic inflammation, which causes chronic disease?
Systemic inflammation, they also add to worse mental health, worse anxiety, worse depression, worse social anxiety, difficulty with headaches, with fatigue, persisting symptoms after a long COVID. And again, we've helped thousands of people with mental health issues, thousands of people with symptoms after long COVID, reduce their symptoms by utilizing the Wallace Protocol, lowering the inflammation in their body, lowering the oxidative stress, and discovering that their fatigue is lessening, they have more energy, their mood is better, that it's easier to get along with their family and their friends and their colleagues at work, that those annoying headaches are less troublesome. We've also had people who have told us that they had problems getting pregnant, were infertile, that they had gone through IVF clinics, finally ran out of money. It's like, okay, I guess I'm not going to have kids. They discover my work, begin implementing the Wallace Protocol, and then they're blessed to get pregnant. And then they get, it's like, wow, that was a miracle. And then they have a second child and then a third child. And they're like, oh my God, I have to get a tubal because I wasn't planning on having more than three kids.
It's interesting because I read elsewhere that you had said that to previous generations, ancestors from way back, they would have made sure that women in their tribes who were looking to conceive were being given the lion's share of the superfoods, as it were, at the time in order to help
them. They were given the superfoods. Absolutely. That our ancestors understood that fertility is vital to the community, to the tribe. So they would make sure that the young women who were trying to have kids got the best nutrition.
I don't expect you to go through all of the book and give all of your secrets away now, but if you were telling the listeners to omit one thing from their diet, what would it be?
If you could swap out, take out the gluten-containing grains and swap out other, say, starchy vegetables, yams, squashes, potatoes, sweet potatoes, instead of wheat, rye, barley, that would be a great first step. And in general, it's easier to do food swaps than simply remove things. So I also want to caution folks who are like, okay, I'm going to go gluten-free. I want to still have my five to 10 servings of grain every day. So I just get gluten-free grains. Well, that's not so good for you. I'd rather you swap out non-starchy vegetables or starchy vegetables for those gluten-containing grains. Added sugar is really terrible for us. We're so addicted to them. That is probably the hardest thing for people to give up. In my clinic, I'll talk to people. We'll talk about what I think the best diet is for them. And I'll ask them, okay, but what do you think you could do successfully? And for some, they're like, okay, they're ready to launch into the whole diet. For some, it's like, okay, instead of having 8 sugar-sweetened beverages a day, and that's sort of a horrifying number, they'll like, okay, I'll cut it by 2 servings. Well, I'll cut it by 1 serving a day. And if that's where you can start, that's where you can start. Because I want you to be successful at first. Decide what either you're going to add, and additions are easier than subtractions, or what level of subtraction that you could be successful with.
We've spoken about meat sources and protein sources. We've spoken about carbohydrates. We've spoken about gluten. Where do you sit on in terms of fats and healthy fats in the diet?
So the fats that our ancestors used, for basically 100,000 years since we've been cooking, were animal fats, lards, chicken fats, beef tallow, goose fat, duck fat. They're quite delicious for cooking with. Then we learned how to cold press olives and make olive oil, which has so much great nutrition. I prefer that people use that cold, because when you heat olive oil, you lose a lot of the goodness of the olive oil. Seed oils were, cottonseed, other seed oils were industrial oils. They have a lot of solvents in them. So I prefer avoiding the seed oils. I think there's a lot of problem. If you're worried about saturated fat, and we have people following a low saturated fat diet, you can certainly do that. Bake, broil, roast your vegetables or your meats, and then pour olive oil over the food afterwards for delicious sauces, and follow a low-fat diet. If you're not worried about saturated fat, you can use these animal fats for cooking. So it depends on the person's medical comorbid issues. Am I going to have them follow a low saturated fat version of my program, or if they can use these animal fats for cooking?
At the outset, you spoke about how you tinkered with supplementation. Do you advise people to supplement in addition to the diet that you're talking about?
I think there are some supplements that universally are probably very helpful. But there's a lot of awareness that vitamin D can be very helpful. We want to have your vitamin D in the top half of the reference range. If you're taking vitamin D, I want you to also take vitamin K2, because the vitamin K helps the body take calcium into your teeth and your bones and helps the vitamin D be more effective. I also want you to get a tan, because we know that humans, we make vitamin D when sunlight hits our skin. It also modulates how our immune cells respond when we get a tan. So vitamin D plus a tan without a sunburn. Your vitamin D should have vitamin K in it as well. There are numerous studies that tell us a supplemental fish oil, so a supplemental omega-3s can be very helpful. And the question is, what's the right dose? And the doses range from 1 to 4 grams a day. I would say 2 to 4 grams a day, lower rates of relapses, lower rates of progression. And then the third supplement that I like people to take, again, this is a great mitochondrial supplement, is a B complex. And you want to have something that has folate, cobalamin, pyridoxine, thiamine, riboflavin, so the whole suite of B vitamins, because that will improve the efficiency of the mitochondria. And then additional supplements depend on the comorbid medical conditions that the person has. Do they have diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, anxiety, depression? I may add additional things like CoQ, lipoic acid, carnitine, probiotics, fiber. But again, I try to look at the comorbid issues. But for everyone, a vitamin D, vitamin K2 combination, a B complex, and a fish oil. A multivitamin, multimineral could also be helpful.
I think it's really important to reiterate that your nutritional intervention and your supplementation early on and the improvement that you saw in your medical condition with your MS wasn't anomalous, because you have since been doing studies, trials, looking at other patients with MS. Could you briefly just remind us again about the results there?
So our first study was in others with progressive, primary progressive, secondary progressive MS. We used the same protocol I used for my recovery. We were able to show that people could do this. They could do the diet, the supplements, the meditation, the exercise, electrical stimulation, and that we had remarkable improvement in quality of life, reduction in fatigue, reduction in anxiety, depression, and an improvement in walking and hand function. We started just measuring the effect on diet, a ketogenic diet, paleo diet. We also measured a low saturated fat diet. Again, we're able to show people could implement these diets, and that we have reduced fatigue, improved quality of life, reduced anxiety, reduced depression, improved walking endurance, improved hand function, improved working memory. That's been a consistent finding. We've done 7 studies. We're now in our 8th study. And as I mentioned, I've got 70 publications overall, 30, more than 30 in diet in multiple sclerosis, cited nearly 2,000 times, presented in multiple international scientific meetings and multiple national meetings. I teach thousands of clinicians every year these concepts. We are creating a movement in the medical world, at least in the integrative medicine world, and we're creating a movement in the general public, because a study up to say is showing that over 50% of people with MS are saying, well, yes, I am using diet. I have changed my diet since being diagnosed because I want to better manage my MS-related symptoms.
It's really remarkable that this isn't front page news. And I'm amazed that I hadn't read about your story prior to in recent weeks, because a lot of this is common sense. A lot of this is going back to nature. A lot of this is going back to the way that our ancestors used to feed themselves and gain nutrition from the natural world. It's extraordinary, really, that that you have to go through as much effort as you have to in order to get your message out there.
And yeah, originally I was very frustrated about this. I've become a little more accepting that it's hard to change our thinking because it's hard for all of us. You and I have a way of understanding the world, and it would take a lot for me to change how I understand the world. And for the listeners, let me help you see how this might be. You probably have people that you love and cherish and you hold in very high regard. It would take a huge amount of evidence again and again for you to begin to think that, in fact, they are untrustworthy, that they have a substance abuse problem, that they have been lying to you. It would take a lot of evidence for you to change your understanding of that person in that relationship. It's just like my neurology colleagues. They have an understanding of the world. It will take a lot of evidence for them to understand that just as important as their disease-modifying treatments that they have to learn about is the use of diet and lifestyle. Now, the good news is I go to these scientific meetings. I present our research. You know, five years ago, we had one poster in this big meeting about diet nutrition. 5 years later, every year we have three to four research posters. Now we're also doing oral presentations about our research. And there are other principal investigators that are now also researching diet. And when I walk the hallways, people are stopping me now, having a few questions about diet. I'm happy to answer the questions. And then they whip out their phone and say, you know, Dr. Walls, could I get a photo with you? Could we do a selfie? My patients would so love that. So I've gone from crazy and dangerous and condemned and as a banned speaker to being recognized as one of the leading scientists who led the way that diet matters. And, you know, in the most recent meeting, international meeting of MS clinicians and scientists, the basic scientists, as they were talking about the mechanisms of how disease happens in MS and how recovery happens, every one of those PhDs were saying, and you know, diet really matters. And they're talking and they're quoting my research. So, you know, I'm not so crazy anymore. We are making progress. And it's, you know, 30 years to change the standard of care. I'm 15 years into this journey. I've gone from crazy, dangerous, and banned to celebrated and invited speaker. In another 5 to 10 years, this will become the accepted norm, that the neurologist will be saying, here are the drugs, but you know what? Just as important as taking the drugs is we have to get you to fix your diet. We have to get you to exercise. And so I don't have time to teach you those things, but I'll send you to a profession who will. And that's what it'll become the standard sometime between the next 5 to 15 years.
Well, I'm all for it. I'm all for diet and exercise for sure. Dr. Walls, if people want to find out more about your book, The Walls Protocol, where can they go?
Okay, so if you go to my website, terrywalls.com, go there. I encourage you to also sign up for my newsletter. So terrywalls.com/email. That way you can hear what I'm doing. Every week we put out a little summary of some interesting research studies that I've read and talking about. Follow me on Instagram, Dr. Terry Walls, D-R-T-E-R-R-Y, Walls, W-A-H-L-S. And I'm going to invite you to go to terrywalls.com/MS study and sign up. If you're in the United States, you can be part of the study that we're doing, efficacy of diet and quality of life. But if you're elsewhere, be in the patient registry, because every year we're also doing additional survey-based studies that we invite people on the database to hear about.
Well, what I will do is I'll pop a link to all of those links in the show notes for this episode. But for the moment, can I just say, Dr. Walls, you're an inspiration, and I wish you many years of good health going forward. Thank you for joining me today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Happy Habit Podcast. If you're enjoying the series, please like, subscribe, share, and do leave the podcast a positive rating if you think we have earned it. Until next time, stay happy.